Welcome to the Quincast Weekly Wrap Up. Join us every week as we chat about happenings in the world of sports, entertainment, and wrestling. I'm Chrissy Rios, founder of Quinn Media, and I'm here with my co-founder and co-host Seth Knupp. Head on over to Twitter to give us a follow at Quinn Media, follow me at the Quinn Bee, and follow Seth at Fearless Fandom. So let's talk about your little trip, Seth, to Universal Studios this past weekend.
All right. I got to start by saying I actually didn't specifically go to Universal Studios. It was a wonderful gift from my grandmother because I went down to pick her up from her vacation and drive her home from Florida, which is nice of me. I'm a good guy. I should be liked. But anyway,
You're starting to sound like a bad Paul Heyman commercial.
there's no such thing as a bad Paul Heyman anything. Anyway, so I flew down very, very early on Friday morning. Left my house like sometime around 3:30 or something. Anyway, I had to take two flights, and the first flight was an AirTran flight. And I don't know if you fly AirTran very often, but it's a pile of shit. And I'm just gonna go ahead and come out and say that. I hope that we weren't intending on having them for a sponsor at any time, but they are fucking garbage. Just straight garbage. And I know that Southwest bought them, so I'm gonna get all that talk, but they're still flying their old jets that are theirs. They're not actually incorporated, like they're not flying Southwest yet, and Southwest hasn't put any money into them to, fix their shit, which I don't think they will. I think they're gonna end up switching out like the jets that they have now for the same jets that Southwest flies, since like all of Seth Southwest jets are the same. They're all 737s, I believe. Anyway, so that flight from Milwaukee to Atlanta was absolutely horrible, and then I had to switch over in Atlanta to another flight, and I had like 30 minutes to get what turned out to be only a couple of gates, so it kind of worked out nicely to get on my Southwest flight and go from Atlanta to Orlando. And that is when the first crazy thing happened to me on this trip, because we were coming in for a landing in Orlando, and I mean, we were like to the point where our wheels were about to touch. You can see the runway out of your window, and you're all ready to for that bump and the brakes and the loud engine and everything. And at the very last second, dude like flips the wings and hits the gas and starts pulling up. And you can hear people just start freaking out on the plane. And mind you, this is a plane going to Orlando, so there are kids just all over in this plane to go to Disney and stuff. So the kids start flipping, and the one of the stewardesses starts going, no, and I'm like, oh my fucking God, like what is gonna happen right now? My assumption was that we were gonna hit something in front of us and we weren't gonna see it coming, because nobody, obviously we can't see. And that initial like panic in the plane wore off after about like 10 seconds, because we got back up into the air. And then the pilot came over and said that a plane didn't clear the runway quick enough, so he had to pull up and take us around and try and land again. And this guy behind me like called bullshit and said that what really happened had to have been that our landing gear was broken or some shit. Like he had a conspiracy theory going like already. And so like let's just say that like we had to turn around, right? So we did this big loop around, and it took about 15 minutes. And that 15 minutes was a very tense 15 minutes, not knowing if we were gonna land successfully the second time or not, because landing is like the worst part of flying anyway, in my opinion. When you get that low in the sky, like the plane bounces around and you're just kind of like, oh, land. Anyway, so we made it safely in Orlando, and everything worked out. We were about 20 minutes late, no big deal. And my grandmother, who is 84, by the way, so this trip home turns into an adventure. But she picks me up, and we go back, and we get a hotel right by the entrance to Universal, which was kind of the plan for me to do while I was there. I was only going to be there. I got there, you know, I got to the hotel and it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And then we were going to be in the car to drive the next morning at 5:30. So that's like my only time in Florida. And the thing that sucked was Universal closed at 7. So by the time I get, you know, I cleaned up from the flight and I put clothes on because I was in, you know.
Flying in the nude like everybody else does.
Absolutely. Just like everyone else. The way it should be, you know. Oh, no, but I was, you know, I was wearing like sweatpants and a hoodie. Like I went totally as comfortable as possible. So I walk to Universal Studios from the hotel. And the guy at the front desk is like, oh, it's just a 1.25 mile walk, no time at all. And I said, okay, I'll go ahead and do it. So I walk to Universal Studios, and it takes like a half an hour. Because whatever his mileage was, first of all, was wrong. And second of all, like, I don't know if you've ever been to Universal Studios in Orlando, but the entrance is a good half a mile at least from where you go into the area, I guess you would say. Like, first you have to go through this whole skywalk thing, and you walk through an area that's all restaurants and a big theater and shops and everything else. They have this whole boardwalk thing built in between Universal and Universal Islands of Adventure, the new park that they've done and everything. So, I mean, you have to walk through all that. And by that time, all right, listen, I left Wisconsin at 5 o'clock in the morning, and the temperature in my car said -3 degrees. Okay. I get to Orlando and I'm walking from a hotel room to Universal Studios and it's 68 degrees. So I had to have looked like a tomato that was just spitting. Because I was
this whole visual keeps getting better.
Oh, I was sweating so bad, and my face, I could feel how red my face was from the walk, because the sun is just like eating me alive. And I didn't get burnt, thank God, because I'm not that pasty, even living in the Midwest. But still, it was pretty rough. And you know, I go to the ticket counter and the woman's first question, and I know they ask this because they want to know, because they give different prices for resident tickets, but her first question, she just looked at me and she's like, wow, where are you from? And I was like, I just flew in from Wisconsin, you know? Like, anyway, so I bought a 2-park pass to do both parks because I'm by myself and I had 5 hours or 5.5 hours or whatever, 4.5 hours to do it. So I started on my journey, and I did a tour of one ride thing or whatever. But the whole reason why I went is because deep down I am about as big of a Harry Potter nerd as there is. And I had to go see the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. Like, I've wanted to go since it opened, and just due to the how fucking expensive it is. It was $143 after tax for the 2-park pass. $143 for one day. Anyway, so I go back there, and when I get to I'm taking pictures like a tourist, and I'm by myself, and I walk, you know, through some stuff, and I get back there, and because it's in the very back corner of the park, and there's Hogwarts, you know, like up on the rocks and everything. And the way they built it is fucking brilliant, because these rocks that are right next to you are just huge. So you're standing next to these huge rocks and it makes it look real big. And then you look up and the castle is built really small, but it's built to look like it's really far away, because the area that you're supposed to be in is actually Hogsmeade, which, if you know anything about Harry Potter, Hogsmeade is the town, you know, outside of where Hogwarts is. So it should be a distance. And it really looks that way. Like, it's a brilliant piece of design. And I couldn't help but admire it like a freaking idiot. Because anyway, so I go in to ride the ride because I say to myself, you know what? I don't care if it's a 30-minute wait. This is what I came here for. I have to make this worth it. So I go in to wait for the Harry Potter ride. And it was at this moment that I realized that at Universal Studios, they have a such thing as a single rider line. Brilliant.
Oh, it's nice.
Absolutely brilliant. So I don't wait in line. I go into the single rider thing and I walk up a completely different part of the castle where, you know, the line that everybody's waiting in, they don't have to look at you, which is another thing I thought was brilliant because they don't get to see you as a single rider walk, you know, completely to the front of the line. They don't actually see that happen, which is smart because if I'm in that line, I'm getting really pissed off that this guy, who happens to be me, walks directly in, says hi to the person telling him he can go down that line. And while everyone else is waiting 30 to 45 minutes, I walked in the door, walked up the stairs, got to the part where everybody's getting on the ride. Somebody looked at me the minute I stepped up through the door. They looked at me and said, "You here?" And I got on the ride. Like my stride was never even broken. That's how awesome it was.
That is sweet.
Yeah. So I could probably talk about the ride for 15 minutes, but I'll just say, if you're a fan of Harry Potter and you haven't been on this, you have to go. Like, you have to make it a destination and you have to do it because it's an intense ride and it has a lot of really cool stuff in it from the books or the movies, depending on, you know, how you view the universe, but both. And it's brilliant. And it was so much fun and it's really exciting ride. Yeah, that's my thing on that. So to continue this, I went into Hogsmeade and I took a shit ton of pictures and they had a lot of cool stuff from the universe that I totally dug. And then when I had finally had enough, I decided I'd continue my journey on through Universal. And the next area that I made sure to get in and take a bunch of pictures of was the Marvel Island of Superheroes or whatever the hell they call it. And in this area, amongst all the awesome rides, which I got on another ride really quickly for the single rider line, which was the Spider-Man ride, and that ride was equally as intense and probably just as cool, they have a great comic book store. Like a giant comic book store with all types of awesome statues and comics. And all types of other
shocking
all types of other really cool shit, but everything that isn't a comic book is really overpriced, like really, really, really overpriced. So I got really depressed and decided that I wasn't going to spend any money and walked right out of there. And that was pretty much when I left that part of the park. So I got in the park at about 2:30 and I left that part of the park at like 4:50, got all the way over to the other side, the old park, at 5:00, which was exactly my plan. And I didn't intend on going on any other rides other than Harry Potter. And I had gone on like two other rides in between there. And the old part of the park I love because I'm a total movie nerd. And the cool thing about the new part of the park is that it's very interactive, and you know, they have the Dr. Seuss area that is very colorful and all Dr. Seuss shit. And they have the Marvel area that's all cool Marvel stuff, and everything's very themed, and Harry Potter and Jurassic Park, and everything you go through is very, very awesomely themed. But in the old part of the park, it feels like you're actually on a movie lot. Like, all the buildings are, you know, old New York or old Chicago or whatever. It feels like you're in the set of The Godfather. And then the rides you see look like actually big buildings you would see on a movie lot because they kind of still are. So to me, that's even more interesting because, like I said, I'm a movie nerd. And, you know, for the most part, I spent that whole, like that last 2 hours just totally geeking out on how cool it was to be on, you know, that part of the park. I did go on a few more rides. Everything was very cool. The Transformer ride was very, very similar to the Spider-Man ride, just insert Transformers where Spider-Man would be kind of thing. It's an adventure ride, a lot of fun, but it felt the exact same, and they used the exact same cars and everything. So, but what I did do, which was really awesome, on the old park, was I went to the Pantages Theater and I saw, a horror movie makeup, like, demonstration, where this guy who works for on movies and stuff to do special effects for blood and gore for horror movies took you through like a demonstration of certain things. He like took someone up from the crowd and cut their arm, and you know, with the knife that shoots blood all over and digs into the arm so it looks like it's actually stuck in your arm. It was really cool. And the person he picked totally cooperated and everything, and showed some really cool clips and effects, and worked on some really cool stuff, and they had great charisma, the host and the guy. It was extremely entertaining. I laughed my ass off. It was totally worth the half an hour that I spent in there. Plus, they had a really cool exhibit with all types of horror movie stuff. They had a Chucky doll, which I had to take like 5 pictures of, because it was like an actual, you know, movie Chucky doll, which that movie, I don't think any movie has scared me for my entire life as much as that first movie did, because my brother and I had the My Buddies, you know, and we had them like sitting up in our room. And after that movie came out, like, we threw them away. And we were young, but we made our parents throw them away. I remember we had our parents throw the My Buddies away, and we had them throw away the Teddy Ruxpins that we had too. Because there was another movie or show or something where Teddy Ruxpin, those things moved their mouths, man. Any toy that does that, just not cool. But anyway, so that's my trip to Universal, and I had to walk all the way back, and my grandma and I did dinner, and we left very early in the morning, and drove about 18 hours home to get her to Illinois. We had to beat that superstorm. I think they called it Titan or whatever. I didn't realize
they named it, but I did get stuck in traffic in that storm too. I know it was pretty bad.
Well, I know that the Chicagoland area got some good snow, but I do know that Central Central Illinois got hit with a lot of ice, and it was really nasty for them. Some of the towns that we had driven through, I saw on the news the next day, were having a lot of trouble with power outages and stuff like that. So I was happy we beat it. But the only thing that kept me going was that the Blackhawks were playing the Penguins for that outdoor game at Soldier Field that night. So we got close enough that WGN came in crystal clear, and I was at least able to listen to the game. Although I know that I didn't get the visual of how awesome it was to see the snow, you know, I recorded it so that I'd be able to watch it later. But the snow falling on the ice and everything, that was a pretty epic hockey game.
It was really cool to watch. I actually we were really trying to get tickets to go, and it was one of those games, even with the kind of snow coming, I thought for sure we'd get our hands on a couple, and no way. Nobody was giving up their tickets for that one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not.
So didn't get to go see it as I'd hoped I could, but watching it even on TV and just, you know, it was amazing because there was so much snow that you could actually see each track, you know, that the puck would make, or like even when they were skating through, you could see the lines of where everything was, and it was just, it was so surreal to watch, and it was, you know, loud even with that kind of cold and snow coming down. The fans were still really into the game, and it was good. I enjoyed it a lot, and I got to see Sharpie hit the first goal. And
I when I did go back and watch it, something I wanted to make sure I commented on, the guys who shoveled during that game, there were so many guys with shovels in their hands for the entire game, shoveling off the surface, shoveling around the surface, shoveling the walkways for the players. The amount of snow that they were pulling off the ice every time they shoveled, and then that snow had to go somewhere, you know, so there were just people working their ass off that entire game to make sure that it went off. And those guys need to get a lot of credit. And it did go off really, really well. And it did. I know they got the win, but they're looking, not to get into too much Blackhawks talk, but they're looking like crap otherwise.
I mean,
they lost again tonight. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. It was a great game, and definitely credit to the crew that was keeping that cleaned off and, you know, even keeping the fans happy, because I understand they were trying to just make sure everybody was warm and content. And
well, can you imagine being parked in that park? Like, the people that got there like 2 in the afternoon and it had been snowing, they got somewhere between like 3 and 5 inches just during the game. So the people that had been there for hours, you know, tailgating and everything, and then they go into the stadium and they come back, like, I can imagine that there had to be quite a number of cars that got stranded in that parking lot that night.
You know what? I'd have to agree with you on that. I don't know. I mean, I never really followed up, and they didn't talk much on, obviously, you know, it wasn't to the main public viewing audience. They didn't care about people's cars. Obviously. But I do wonder if they kept, knowing how they kept it so cleaned up in the stadium, I just almost wonder if they had people out there doing that in the parking lot to try to make it as seamless as possible for people to leave too.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. They probably did a really good job of keeping that parking lot clean, and I'm sure the city helped people get out of the parking lot and get out of the area so that they didn't have a serious traffic issue on their hand. I'm sure they did a good job. But I know that we didn't really hit any weather, you know, going back to the drive part of it, because like I said, we were listening to it, and we didn't really hit any weather until somewhere around Gilman, outside of Kankakee, which is like, I was driving to Manteno, not to get too specific with areas here for people who have no fucking idea what I'm talking about.
I live in the state and I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I mean, yeah, you're talking about, we were only 60 miles from Chicago. So, so that's when we hit some of the weather, and, the realization came that I wasn't going to make it all the way home to Wisconsin. So I had to stay at my grandma's and watch some Saturday Night Live, which it was one of the worst Saturday Night Lives of all time, by the way. So if you didn't watch it and you were planning on it, I'll save you the trouble and tell you don't watch it because you'll hate it. So the next morning I get my ride from my aunt to head back home, and, Sunday turned into a day of just straight up relaxation for me, since I had just driven, you know, like almost 19 hours because the weather really slowed us down in one day. And, minus the 4 hours that my grandma drove, which I won't get too much into because, like I said, when I was first talking about this, that it became an adventure because she's rather old and she can barely see. I mean, she can see out of one eye perfect, but she can barely see out of the other. So she kind of drifted, and she tried to drink coffee at the same time once and spilled some coffee, and I thought I was going to die. And it was interesting and it was fun. So I made myself go to sleep through the mountains in Tennessee so that I kind of figured that if I was going to die in a horrible car wreck, at least I would be asleep for it.
I'm so glad you didn't leave this stuff out.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's where it went. So I get back Sunday and I decide it's time to just chill out and spend some time with my family and recover from the trip. And then, Sunday is Sunday.
Yeah. Sunday was crazy busy for me. It was a nutty day, but it was also a big day with the Oscars. And I really want to kind of get your thoughts on it and talk to you about the show, because I know you're a total movie buff and this stuff is right up your alley.
Yeah. I love the Oscars. At least I used to. I did watch and I do watch pretty much every year. And I have, since like high school. Not to get too personal or anything, but when I was a kid, my mom and stepdad decided that TV was the devil, but movies were okay. So I developed this habit of like watching movies and watching everything, even if they thought it wasn't something I should watch. And, when I was in like my sophomore year of high school was when I finally watched A Clockwork Orange. And it totally changed my life because I realized that movies were made for art and for political and all these purposes other than just for like cheeseball entertainment. Because up until that point, the only movies that my parents watched were like Captain Ron and shit like that. So ever since, I've had like serious interest in film. I've tried to get into screenwriting a couple times. I've always just really latched on to movies. So the Oscars used to be like a really huge night for me. I used to have parties and do like prediction papers with my friends and stuff like that. But at some point I became rather disillusioned with the Academy, mostly because, they have a tendency, they've gotten away, you know, back in the day you would get like, Gone with the Wind, for instance, that just wins everything because it's just that much of a better movie and everyone knows it's a better movie and it wins everything. And in these days you can have a movie where the actor, like the lead actor is nominated, the supporting actor is nominated, the lead actress is nominated, the supporting actress is nominated, the screenwriter is nominated, the director is nominated, the costume designer is nominated, and they can win none of them. And that's what you get these days because everything has to be kind of a political statement. And if you're not willing to make a political movie, you can't win the Oscars. And that's kind of more recent. I watched a transition from with people that should have won actor or actress wins that got beat for political reasons over the years, and it just started to wear down on me. This year was sort of no different, depending on how you cut it. And I think it's another reason that they started adding a lot more movies, too. You know, if you go back as far as like 5-6 years ago, you only had 5 movies getting nominated. Now you have 9. Yeah. Last year it was 10.
And I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's factual, so thanks for agreeing. Right.
I agree that they're the reason why I feel like what you're getting at.
Yeah,
I'm agreeing.
Yeah,
with.
Yeah, it's so they can give you a nomination, so they can say, hey, we think your movie is really great, but we're going to give an award to a smaller movie that really nobody watches because it says something political. And it kind of takes away, which is why I prefer the Golden Globes. Because the Golden Globes, first of all, split things up into like a comedy or musical / you know, super drama, which is, you know, American Hustle won everything in the comedy or musical, despite the fact that it's hardly a comedy. I mean, it's funny, but it's like situational comedy. It's not the Three Stooges, but right. it was their way of getting them all of those awards. So I think that is a brilliant way of doing it. I'm sorry, I kind of went on a rant there a little bit, but American Hustle got completely shut out, and
I was really disappointed because I thought Amy Adams deserved. And it should have. I agree with you. I was so pissed off when I found out she hadn't won because I didn't catch that in the show.
Well,
and
I'll say this: I wasn't really pissed because I wasn't surprised. The Amy Adams thing for actress, I actually was a little shocked that they gave it to Kate Blanchett. But again, I haven't actually seen Blue Jasmine. That's another thing. In more recent years, it's become harder to watch all the movies because a lot of the movies that get nominated now aren't even wide released movies. They're movies that if you don't have more of an art house kind of yuppie theater around you, you can't go see because, you know, movies like Blue Jasmine and 12 Years a Slave and like those movies didn't get everywhere. They weren't released in every theater across the country. And so that it's hard to really have a completely educated opinion because not all those movies are viewable to everybody and not everybody cares to see, you know, to be completely fair to Jared Leto and Matthew McConaughey, who both did win. And I haven't seen Dallas Buyers Club yet, but it appears that they both truly deserve it for taking on their roles very seriously. But not everybody not everybody cares to see that movie. And that's okay. The award should be for the art of it. And as a movie fan, I've always said that I love that they give it to people for, you know, their art. But part of making art in that, for film at least, should also be making something that people are, you know, wanting to see, but doing in an extremely artistic way, which is why my disappointment comes with something like American Hustle getting shut out, because all of those people that made that movie did amazing pieces of work. They all put a ton of everything into their art, but because it made money and it wasn't political, they don't want to give it an award. They'll nominate it so that they can say, hey, we recognize you for being awesome at your craft, but you didn't make a political statement, so you're not worthy of our recognition past the nomination. So it was just a tad on the annoying side. And it's another reason why I try and stay away from the Academy Awards anymore. On a positive note, I'll make two positive notes before I move on. Spike Jonze got the award for writing her, for making her, I guess. It was the best screenplay not adapted. And I love Spike Jonze. I love everything that guy does. So I was really happy about that. And then Alfonso Cuarón winning for director for Gravity, I think, is fantastic, because that movie is pretty amazing. It didn't really have any shot going into Best Picture, in my opinion. I was a little disappointed. I actually thought Sandra Bullock would win that award for actress, even over Amy Adams, because she just did such an amazing job, you know, falling apart in that movie and still keeping it together and just being fantastic. But that's my take on that. I think I just ran out of steam in regards to the Oscars.
I kind of was watching in and out, 'cause I was doing a bunch of stuff and I was, you know, I had a ton of things I was trying to pull together. So I didn't get to pay full attention to the show, which I probably didn't miss much according to what you just said. So I'm not feeling awfully bad about it. I do know there were some really popular things that happened, and there was a huge John Travolta misstep that has turned into like an internet phenomenon, and find out what your John Travolta name is. And it's always just been the hysterical. Same name.
It's hysterical. Yeah.
Adele Dazeem. Like, no, her name is it's Idina Menzel, I think. Yeah,
I don't know. I love her, but I don't know her name. And that song won, so that says something, you know. But Travolta, Travolta bombed on that. And there were some really cool things. You got to give a shout out to Ellen. She did fantastically.
She did a great job.
She was hilarious the entire time. And
the pizza ordering thing
was good.
Brilliant. Was good. And today they showed on her show, just to kind of lead into the pizza guy that was there. He didn't get tipped or anything that night. They paid him for the pizzas and sent him on his way. So Ellen collected from people in the audience, you know, like the people that were there at the Oscars. She collected $600 and put in $400 of her own and brought the guy on the show and tipped him today.
Oh, that's awesome.
Is that not badass? Yeah, that's really cool. I was so in love with that. Yeah, so I thought that was great.
She did do a really good job, and she was low on the offensive stuff, you know, which is kind of her MO to not be offensive, but
she was a little edgy this year, and I liked that a lot. Well, like she did kind of throw it out there.
If you've ever seen her stand up, she actually is pretty edgy. She's not who she is on her show. Let's just put it that way.
Right. And I've seen her comedy stuff and I loved her, you know, when she was doing her stand-up acts. And of course, the show has to be different because it's daytime television and I get that. Right. But I really love to see that she embraced it a bit and she was a bit edgier. Not, of course, not over the top, right, or she was going to get slammed by people.
She wasn't Seth MacFarlane.
No. But you know what? He could have told the same jokes and he would have gotten slammed. Yeah.
I love it.
Let's be fair.
Yeah, absolutely.
He could have said everything verbatim what she said and they would have crushed
him. Fair enough. Touche, sir.
It is the fact, Jack. So, but I did, the reason I didn't get to stay and watch the Oscars, if we can kind of pull out of that, I got to go and hang out. My buddy was in town, and you may have heard of him before watching wrestling. I got to hang out with the Dr. Xavier Woods. He and I are friends. And so I got to hang out with him. We, you know, covered a bunch of stuff in conversation that I would not, you know, I'm not going to put on a podcast. It was interesting and funny and good stuff. But he was in town for the Raw show on Monday. And it was great to catch up with him and, you know, talk about things. And he's so passionate about wrestling and about the business. And, you know, I know he's gotten a push up and I really do hope, you know, not that I think any of the McMahon family is listening to this podcast by any stretch, but I would love to see him get a better push and to get, you know, a t-shirt perhaps.
I'd love to see him get his own music.
His own music would be a definite plus, yeah, because that is, it sucks when you see somebody getting recycled music and he's better than that. And I'm biased and I'll say that, you know, when you're friends with somebody, it's easy to be biased about things and expect more for them. But I really do believe he's earned it. He put in his time at NXT and, you know, he's a TNA, you know, alumni, and he's been through the ranks and he's done this for a while. So hopefully he gets the push and he, you know, gets a t-shirt and maybe gets his own music and, you know, a jazzy little entrance would be nice. So, jazzy. Yeah, you know, something sparkly. And then maybe that'll earn him a few more spots.
Something
and some
with
more
big hair.
I think he's got that covered, though. You know, I don't feel like he's lacking anything in the hair department. He's got that one nailed. And it is his hair. People like, sometimes they'll ask, is that really his hair? It's like, well, if he was going to pick a wig, that's a really shitty choice. So it's his hair. It's like legit his. But yeah, you know, at the end of the day, I'm hoping that it leads to more appearances and he gets some more, you know, singles competition. I don't really want to see him tag teamed up anymore. But some singles competition and more time on Raw and SmackDown and so forth, then, you know, which will then kind of transition me into Chicago Raw.
Right.
It was a big, it was a big deal for me because I was there.
Right.
So it was very loud and very electric and my signal sucked ass on my phone and I really wanted to kind of tweet it and talk about the show and, you know, send images and whatever I could do from the show, but my signal. So when we got there, we had tickets and we got upgraded and we were moved from our tier to front, like, you know, a floor by the ramp. And we were really close to where Brock Lesnar threw the monitor in his crazy rage. We were really close to that spot. So we had great, you know, seats and were able to see everything super close up and, you know, be a part of it. And it's an experience, I have to say, and we'll go through the show and stuff and I want to talk about it, but I just want to say being there in person, I'm kind of glad I didn't get to see Twitter where I saw, you know, afterwards that there was some slamming going on the crowd, but and that's, and I'll lead this to the entrance, but it really was insanely loud in that arena. Like the most intensely loud captured sound I've ever been a part of.
Well, and you're not the only person I've seen, you know, defend the live experience versus what translated on TV. And I'm not going to go into like conspiracies like I felt there were in LA where they had, you know, really muted the sound or anything. I think there's a little bit that always gets lost from being part of the crowd versus, you know, watching it on TV and seeing the commercials, you know, edit things even unintentionally. Things happen during commercial breaks, or there's noise that doesn't translate onto the mics, or they set up the mics a certain way so that not everything is going to translate well. So, you know, those things happen. And I've been in that building before for, you know, WWE events. I was there for Payback last year, and I know how loud that place gets, and it's intense. It really is. So,
and this was amped up. I mean, I've been to Raw events and I've been to other WWE events in that building as well. And I've experienced sound there. I've been there for concerts too. That sound that night was unlike anything I have ever experienced.
I saw Korn there in 2000. God. Anyway, sorry. you mentioned concerts and I really wasn't even thinking that, but I did. I saw Korn in that.
But I was just, you know, like kind of comping the experience that everything I've ever been there for. And I've been there for some very loud events and very loud, you know, crowd reactions to bands and so forth. This was something I've never experienced in my life. And I don't know that I ever would again. It was so, the energy was so insane.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. And I think that's the part that doesn't always translate. Like, you're talking a lot about the sound, but in reality, it was probably more the energy that you're trying to express than just the sound, because there was obviously, you know, as soon as that show opened, and even watching the pre-show on the network, Josh Matthews had to be the first person since the Royal Rumble to mention the name CM Punk. Because
yeah, we didn't hear that inside the stadium.
Of course not. But, you know, he had to mention it because during the pre-show, while they're filming Superstars, you can hear the chants already. So the show hasn't even started yet and the chants have. So he had to make a mention of what the fans are saying, and that CM Punk hasn't been on TV since he walked out that Raw and everything. And he kept it very to the point and just kind of moved on. And then they went back to ignoring it. But, you know, with the opening with Heyman and everything, there's two sides of it for me. There's the fan of CM Punk side that says, "Aw," and then there's the wrestling fan side that says it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant in all ways conceivable, because of the relationship that Heyman had with Punk, of the mic skills that Heyman has coming out there and being able to deliver that promo. They're really, you know, he said he was the only one willing to talk about him, but in reality, there is absolutely nobody else that could have cut that promo the way he did. There's zero people that could have cut that promo that way. So, you know, that part of it's perfect. And then being able to translate it into blaming The Undertaker, and then transitioning it even further into Brock Lesnar is going to, you know, destroy The Undertaker, and turning it into an actual promo for his guy and for a WrestleMania match. I mean, it's just like, you don't get any better than that. You do not get any better than that. And if he comes out in any other building and does that promo for Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar without all the CM Punk stuff that he had to say because he was in Chicago and they needed to take the crowd out of it right away, it's not nearly as good of a thing to do. And then, you know, Brock coming out and Mark Henry coming out again. I have no idea what Mark Henry is doing getting involved with Brock Lesnar either. They're trying to just completely kill Mark Henry so that he'll go away, or I don't understand what they're doing there. But I guess that takes us a little away from the point. The promo was perfect, and it got the crowd so loud and so into it so early that they had to have time to recover, and so they were able to and then they spent the next hour of the show just pummeling the crowd with action that kept the CM Punk chants down and that kept the crowd working, kept them on their feet, kept them cheering, kept them screaming and yelling. So I'd be willing to guess that a quarter of the audience had already lost their voice by the time the second hour of TV came around.
I would, I would say that was fair. I mean, when the first, when the music hit, because it was, there was this moment of just dead silence, and then the music hit.
Because everybody knew it was going to hit.
I guess you did, but you didn't. You know what I mean? And there's that moment of like hope, but you don't want to be let down. And, you know, and there was just that dead silence, and then it hit, and it, just deafening sound and the energy. And I mean, I had goosebumps. It was crazy. And then of course Heyman came out, and he came to the ring, and he sat and he did the cross-legged punk sit. I remember the first words out of my mouth were, what a dick. Like, it was, as a fan, as a punk fan, I took over there for a minute, and it was like, what a dick. Like, this guy's such a douchebag. I fucking hate him. But then, as he was talking, there was something he said, and it really kind of stuck with me. And even when I saw the replay, the television replay, it still stood out. And it was where he kind of called out that, you know, if he were here, he would be doing what he always does. And he would be showing them that they can't hold him down. And it was something to that effect. And I should have written it down, and I didn't. But at that moment, I switched over from, even live, I switched out of the punk fan and did kind of what you said. And it was the wrestling fan in me sat back and thought, this is fucking genius. Like, it's genius, because this crowd is going to die fast. And not die completely, but I knew it was going to take the wind out of the sails.
Yeah, because he gave him an opportunity to cheer for him for a long time. Like, he built him up, and then he moved on. And so he gave him a fix. Like, if you look at it from that regard, he gave the crowd a fix. And it was brilliant. It worked to perfection. But to go back to the very opening, because there's, I think it was clear, and everyone that was in that show, or at least a huge percentage of the people that were at that show, already had a feeling that one way or another his music was going to hit. Whether it was Bad News Barrett coming out, whether it was what happened, which was Heyman coming out, whether it was Triple H and Stephanie coming out, or whether it was actually CM Punk, his music was going to hit. So you could tell that the crowd was extremely happy for it, but they instantly had this sense of trepidation. Once he didn't come out right away, you could see it in the crowd on the faces of everybody, and people started to get quiet again really fast because they realized that he wasn't coming out, or they were waiting for him to come out, but they felt like they were going to be tricked, and because the crowd already knew that there was the potential that they were going to get tricked.
Yeah.
You know, because they had to do something. The music was going to hit. They were going to do something. They couldn't ignore him in that building. It was never going to work for them to ignore him. So
no, and I agree. There was no way they were going to look it over.
No, they couldn't. It wouldn't have worked. So they did what they did, and it worked out perfectly. And then the whole first hour was action, action, action. You know, they give the Usos the belt, so you cheer for the Usos. And the New Age Outlaws really healed it up in that building, so that when, you know, they did that on purpose, so that when the Usos take the belt, you're cheering so loud for the Usos that you're not hitting them with CM Punk chants. So everything they did made a ton of sense. And then the second hour, they lulled everybody to sleep.
One of the things too, you know, when you're really close up and you see these guys, you know how big or small they are by how close you are to them, because you can gauge your own height and size to them. And Brock comes out and he goes up to the ring, and you look at him and he's a scary dude. I mean, he's big and he's scary and he's frightening. And then he talks, and it's like, dude, you're the least scary person on the planet. Like, my mom could wrestle you and win. It's just so ridiculous. He's so not intimidating when he talks. So they should probably not let him do mic work going forward. And then there was another thing that happened, and I know it didn't happen because when I watched the show, but during the Usos match, Road Dogg, and it went to commercial clearly because I watched the replay, but he kind of got off of the apron of the ring and he grabbed a mic and he just started smack talking the crowd. So he kind of brought the crowd where the crowd was getting a little bit lulled, and you could sense it even in the arena. I could sense it. The crowd had kind of the wind of the sails had really gone. He kind of picked them back up and got them back into it by agitating them. And then they really started cheering for the Usos. So it kind of brought the crowd back into it for that. And it was great to see them win the titles. And it was nice to see a title change on Monday Night Raw, especially this close to WrestleMania. Because it's not something that happens very often when you get this close to a big show.
Right. Yeah, I wasn't shocked to see them pick up the belts. They pretty much, I thought they were going to do it last week, but they made it a non-title match that they won. And maybe they just needed to prove that they could win. I don't know what the deal was with that. And then, you know, doing the match two weeks in a row. Maybe they decided to have him drop the belt in Chicago for that very purpose, because they knew that if the New Age Outlaws healed it up enough, like you said they did, that the crowd would be on the Usos' side, which they ended up being. And the more they could have that crowd on people's sides, the less they would be distracted enough to chant for CM Punk.
And it worked, because the crowd was really behind the Usos for that. And, you know, they right. cheered them all the way through. And especially after that, you know, in between the commercial break where he kind of just slammed the crowd and said we weren't creative and, you know, don't compare ourselves to Brooklyn. And it was just ridiculous. But when he did it, and then he kind of got back up on the ring skirt and he got kicked by one of the Usos, the crowd went bananas. So they were really back right. into it again, and they were into it in a, you know, big way for the Usos. And I was glad to see them win it, because I kind of really come to embrace them over the past couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So I was very happy to see them win it. And then, you know, it kind of fed into the next match that I already knew the outcome. And that was the Jack Swagger, Cesaro match with Big E. And,
well, what do you mean you already knew the outcome?
I kind of already knew that Swagger was going to interrupt the match.
Oh, yeah, that it was going to go yes. down that way? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, yeah, they're done.
Yeah, and so I guess kind of it was that, you know, I wasn't as into that
but
match
you know what?
Because that, I knew that was going to happen.
You know what? That also has to do with the crowd, though. I think that's a push that happened more quickly because of the love that Cesaro is getting. And with the crowd the way it was, they needed someone else to put over. And it wasn't going to be Big E, because nobody seems to really care much about Big E. But people are clinging to Cesaro. So you have Swagger, you know, heal it up. And Cesaro gets angry about it. And it's just another case of them pushing the action and getting somebody that the crowd is really behind, giving them somebody else to root for, so that they're not, you know, rooting for CM Punk during the match.
But even during all of these matches, I want to say I don't think there was one that didn't get it. The chant still happened. Regardless of whatever the match was, it did still happen.
Yeah, but it didn't happen with the ferocity that the whole, like, hijack movement mm-hmm. wanted. Like, it wasn't, the whole crowd wasn't into it at any point. I mean, they did a good job. I'm just going to give them their credit. Like, I feel like that's just kind of, I mean, the show, to be honest, the show was good. It was a good Raw, minus the second hour. Like I said, the whole second hour was garbage. But then they picked it right back up, and, you know, Stephanie and Triple H were able to super heel to that crowd, which, again, you know, I have to say this. I had gotten in a bit of a Twitter spat with some guy about the crowd being the show, and it got really, like, I held back quite a bit to not be completely ugly. But a lot of what happened Monday night would not have happened the way it did, or would have not had the effect, if the crowd isn't part of that show, because everybody played to the crowd.
Oh, absolutely.
And especially Triple H and Stephanie when they came out, and Daniel Bryan played to them too. And that whole situation played to the crowd and to the, you know, they hijacked the hijack. Like, they used it as their storyline, and they tried to push that heat onto Daniel Bryan, and they were somewhat successful, to be honest. They were somewhat successful in pushing the heat that building was bringing right onto Daniel Bryan, and take the Hijack Raw movement and join it with the Yes movement. And it's just this one big thing now that Daniel Bryan can use for his, you know, backing against the big heel Triple H.
And there was a, you know, I mean, obviously when, you know, Daniel Bryan came out, the crowd went crazy and they were, you know, fully right. into it, and they were doing the Yes chant, and it was back, you know, like back to life kind of thing. And, but there was one really cool point where he was in the ring, and I don't know if you saw it on TV. I mean, I noticed it, but I noticed it because I was there first, and so I paid more attention to it. But there was a CM Punk chant that happened when he was in the ring, and he got this big, giant smile on his face. And it was so cool because he kind of was like, you know what, I'm going to let him do it. I'm going to let him have it, and then I'm taking it back. And, you know, he really, really did. And he came in with, you know, the Hijack Raw statement. And I agree. They took it and they owned the statement. And it was smart to do.
Right. Yeah, they absolutely
did. But when Stephanie came out and Hunter came out and they were in the ring, I could not hear a single word she was saying. The boos were so loud. I couldn't hear a single word she said. So when I heard it on the replay, I was like, oh, that's what she was saying. Like, nothing was coming through on the mic from her inside the arena. Her boos were much louder than Triple H's were.
Well, yeah. I mean, because, you know, a lot of people still respect Triple H.
Yeah, I mean, it was just brutal for her. I mean, they did do the asshole chant for him, and then he turned it on Daniel Bryan, which was kind of, I mean, I will admit I giggled when he was like, they're wanting you to talk next. Like, he it was like, pro. Brilliant, dude. That's on your feet thinking, like, right away on a dime. Like, that was perfect. But, you know, it was kind of the, oh, wow, it was just crazy to experience all of that scene there too, and see how they turned it around. And the fans though didn't really embrace, and they really showed displeasure when Daniel had said that he wanted the match at WrestleMania with Triple H. The fans kind of booed it out, like, no, don't do, you know, we don't want that. So.
Right. Well, part of the whole Hijack thing was to try and make a point that WWE is trying to say through tweets and stuff that a Triple H versus Daniel Bryan match is what the fans want. And, you know, part of their whole statement was it's not anything even close to what the fans want. The fans don't want Triple H to wrestle at WrestleMania, and they want Daniel Bryan in the title match, which that storyline can still play out. I'm not convinced that they're building that match for WrestleMania. It might be going somewhere else, so we'll see. There's a lot of rumors of the stipulation that it'll be the first match and Daniel Bryan will win and get a shot at the title. And I'm just saying that that it's not what people want to see as far as the actual match. Like, nobody cares if they wrestle. It doesn't do anything for Daniel Bryan at this point. And That was my point. It's still about the title shot for Daniel Bryan as far as making people happy.
I agree. I think it's a waste of time to have him there and wrestling Daniel Bryan to push him into. If they decide to turn it into like a fatal four-way or a triple threat match or whatever they want to do with it, if they do that, it's just pointless to have Triple H there to kickstart it. It's a complete time waster on the show. The next thing, though, that the crowd really kind of dug and I was excited to see was Paul Bearer getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. And it's been a couple weeks since they've inducted anybody. So it was good to see that they picked that trail back up because it seemed to have gone dead for a while.
I didn't realize it had been a couple of weeks. I know that they skipped last week and we made a comment about it because I thought it was completely strange. I didn't know why they skipped a week. But yeah, it's awesome that it's Paul Bearer. And he deserves it. So that's a good pick for their next inductee.
Yeah, he's a good choice. When the music hit though, and you know, the first thing you heard was the Undertaker bell, you know, the chime. It was kind of, there was a moment of just like confusion, because it was like, wait, what? Are they inducting him into the Hall of Fame and having him wrestle at WrestleMania? So there was just that brief moment of, wait, what the hell is going on? And then you heard, you know, the high-pitched voice, and it came right, in, and right. It was like, oh, that's great. And it kind of sucks, because you almost wish, that's somebody you wish kind of would have been around to see it happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so it's... It's crummy that he isn't around, because I think he's somebody that really did give his life to the business.
Well, yeah, and you know, there's no Undertaker doesn't work without that character. So the streak and everything else, it doesn't even exist without Paul Bearer. So he absolutely is every bit of it completely deserving.
Yeah, agreed. And then there. So coming out of that, they go and they have the second Biggie match, which.
I don't even, that was the most confusing point of the entire night.
Thank you.
I mean, I don't know where that came from or why they did that or where that becomes an idea or how they planned that. Like, that to me is beyond confusing, just beyond confusing. My only guess at that, and I haven't read this anywhere or anything, my only guess is that they got such a reaction from the first one, or they decided that because the crowd was what it was, that they were going to run with the Cesaro thing and really put, you know, a stamp on the whole ending of the Real Americans that night, that they felt that they had to do something totally wacky and off the wall. But putting Big E out there twice without real warning or building, or like there was a stipulation, or it just, they didn't ever discuss it. They just did it, and it made it awkward and strange. And I remember looking at my TV thinking that I was getting a replay or something weird. Like, it didn't feel like it was actually happening live, because there was no reason for it. There was no explanation. It just happened. And then, you know, they had their little tiff, and they're having, you know, their daddy's taking care of them and blah.
That whole scene was just, well, when his music hit, there was kind of that confusion in the ring or in the arena too, of like, wait, didn't we just see this shit? Like, what is this? And then he came in, and it was very quickly. The match was, you know, one and done. It was so fast. But right. Even watching the whole play out of, you know, give your brother, help your brother up, it was so lame. It was just, the crowd couldn't even understand what the hell was happening there.
It was very forced.
It just seemed, and it seemed just weird. Like, I can't even explain. I mean, it didn't come together nicely. I mean, the fans did the whole, you know, we the people at the end, and they were able to clean it up and lock it up and move it on. But it just seemed, it was the one head scratcher of the night. Like, that was just dumb. And then, you know, that kind of shuts down, and the music cues up for John Super Cena, and the place gets real ragey real fast again. And, you know, the boos were pretty heavy, and he came out. But I have to say, and I am not a fan of this guy, but in that moment when he was talking to the crowd, I mean, he really played the role. He sold it like nothing I've ever seen. I mean, he, you know, he kind of made it funny, because when he was like, you know, I'll take that as you guys way of, you know, telling me to get well, I couldn't help but not kind of laugh, because I thought, this guy, he comes out, he knows this stadium hates him. Nobody here has any love for the guy. And then at least he was able to laugh at it.
Yeah, but he also didn't mention CM Punk by name. So they gave Heyman the ability to come out and mention him by name and go through the whole promo. But by the end of the show, they get Cena out there, and he just says, I had a really special moment with a certain guy.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, that in itself was, I was kind of over it. I did appreciate what he tried to do and how he did it, but it was just another one of his typical promos in the end where it was about him being awesome and, you know, standing on his hurt knee and his torn freaking groin, because that actually sounds like it's like the knee was supposedly a work, but the groin actually got torn this week or something. I don't know.
But for a guy who was or is supposed to be injured, I have to tell you, he moved really well. And it almost seemed like the limping was very, it would come and go. Like, right. Watching him walk around, I was like, you know, you were limping 3 seconds ago. Get back to it, buddy, because you stopped. And then he, you know, at one point he's sitting there saying he can't really run and he can't do anything. But then he starts running around the ring. And it just, that kind of stuff, like, it's, it pisses me off when I see that, because then it's kind of like they insult the intelligence. You know, yep, I can watch, I can see what you're doing. So I know you're not as hurt as you're saying, but you want me to pretend like you are because you think I'm an idiot. It that's the shit I hate that they try to sell to the crowd in a big, bad way. And then the Wyatts came in and I loved their kind of cut to it. And, you know, they did make sure to kind of say, you know, like, are you listening to the crowd? And I thought that was a great way to kind of play into the hijack thing again and keeping it into their, you know, can you feel their energy and stuff? And I thought that was great. And they creeped me out like no tomorrow, but I did enjoy their promos and I thought it was good stuff. And, you know, I don't know. I really liked watching them more than I thought I would in person. I thought I was going to kind of like freak out and just reject it and, you know, look away, but I dug it. They were really, really good. And Bray is just kind of wearing on me as time goes on. I'm kind of starting to dig the guy and his very soft features.
Yeah. He cuts good promo. That's mm-hmm. for sure.
Absolutely. And then they end, you know, they go into the final match with, which, by the way, at that point, I couldn't imagine how they were going to fit anything in, because it was so late in the show when they decided to bring out, and they did that Rusev promo, which seemed very out of place too.
Yeah, it really did. It was very out of place, and they were way over time, and it started to feel like nothing was going to happen or something big was going to happen to end the match really fast, which I'm still convinced that they did that on purpose to fuck with the crowd. Like, I don't think there's any other explanation needed. I think they continued to toy with the Chicago crowd's emotion, because by that point, the show was almost over. So everyone in the crowd went back to just 100% CM Punk. That, 'cause that's what they wanted. And that's what they wanted to see happen. And they thought they were going to get it at the end of the show, because it didn't happen at the beginning of the show. And they just kept fucking with them. They had the match run really late, so everyone was expecting him to come in and end the match. And then when Triple H comes out, you're maybe expecting him to come out and deal with that situation. And it just never happened. And I still think that was 100% planned to make a point that CM Punk is gone and they were going to troll the crowd.
The vibe was really set for me at the very beginning with the whole Heyman thing. And it was really, I felt like that was the statement. He's not coming. He's not going to be here. You just let it go. And
yeah, because every time somebody says that someone's not in the building, that means they're really not in the building.
Well, no, right? I know. But I mean, there was something about it that just felt genuine, I guess, in its own way. I don't know how to explain it, but it kind of really, I didn't think he was going to pop up, in all honesty. I didn't know how they were going to do anything, though, with the time that they had left. And then it got really weird, because now with that backstage pass thing, the show seems to be running a little bit later anyway. Because wasn't it also last week, it was like 10 minutes after 10 when the show ended? I want to say it was. And then this past week again, it was like 10 minutes after 10 when it signed off, I guess, from TV, but it kept going in the ring after for backstage pass. So it made it a little bit confusing because at one point, which wasn't on TV, they had John Cena ran out and wrestled in the ring. They had Randy was in the ring and, you know, people just kind of came from backstage and took each other out. Big Show showed up and, you know, his music hit and he came out and he started, you know, like throwing people's bodies around. And it got really weird at the end because you didn't understand what, like, you knew that Randy kind of interrupted the match to end the Daniel Bryan match, but it just kept going. And it weirdly lingered on. And at one point, like, Randy's in the ring and he's trying to shake hands, you know, and be friends, like partner up with Big Show or partner up with, you know, Daniel Bryan. And he's standing in the corner like, no, you know, doing the no sign. And, you know, Randy's kind of stuck in the middle of these guys and he knows he's going to get attacked. And then, you know, the music cues and somebody else comes out. It was just a really weird ending that just kind of kept going and didn't stop. And you didn't know, should we leave or is this still, when is this going to end? Like, and then you saw the backstage pass thing pop up on, you know, the big Jumbotron, but there was nothing being said to the crowd. Right. So there was just, you're just kind of standing there trying to figure out what the hell is going on. And then eventually they just kind of, you know, the match just seems to end. I don't even remember how it ended because I was still trying to figure out what was happening. And then it just trailed off and, you know, the guys were kind of running out and going around the sides of the ramp and, you know, high-fiving people. And then they did the big, you know, WWE wants to thank you for coming. But it was just a very weird ending. I don't know if that's how they want to, if they're going to keep doing this backstage pass, I think they need to have a very obvious break because there was no break. It was just a very weird kind of transition. I think there's a way that they could probably do it going forward where they say, you know, we're going into back, I don't know. Maybe I'm just overthinking how they could make that make more sense for the crowd and not be so, the hell's going on here type of thing. Because the crowd wasn't really sure how to react to all of it either because nothing made sense. There's all of a sudden, you go from a match to having like seven people in a ring kind of trying to be friends with everybody. Right. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about with the show or with, you know, anything else that happened in your weekend? Or are you...
I am good.
...settled in? All right, well then let's tuck this one away. I want to say thanks to my co-host, Seth Knupp. I'm Chrissy Rios. You can hit us up on Twitter and ask us any questions or leave comments or share any thoughts on the show by going to Quinn Media on Twitter. You can hit up Seth at Fearless Fandom or myself at the Quinn Bee and use the hashtag QuinnCast so we can get back to you faster. Also, check out any of our reviews, interviews, and past podcasts on our website at quinnmedia.com. Thank you for tuning in and joining us, and we'll catch you next week for the next QuinnCast Weekly Wrap-Up.